Welcome back, Nate.
Holy cow, Donovan.
We are recording directly from Dressing Room 3 in the basement of the Colorado Convention Center.
My God, we are still here at the HOW Conference. This is our 9th recording?
Nah, something like that.
Something like that. Something ridiculous like that. Our special guest today is David Berman, author of Do Good Design, or is it just Do Good?
Do you have any regular guests, or are they all special?
We have regular guests, yes. Amazing Chris K. I would call him regular.
Yeah, Steve Gordon's on the show all the time.
Yeah, we regular. Got regulars. You're a special guest. Feel good about that. You can grab onto it.
So special.
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm very, very well. Happy to be in Denver.
Yep. Denver's been a little warm. Today, a little bit cooler outside. I've been feeling good about that. I've been baking during lunch and not enjoying that part of it. But anytime we're inside, it's been better. Denver's been killing. So you were at the HOW Conference yesterday. You gave a great presentation about doing good.
You're very kind.
Thank you. You're very good at your presentation.
Man.
Tell us a little bit. Let's start with the book, if we can. Do Good Design. Tell me where this book...
Design scribbled out, so should I not do good design?
No, well, I think it's about doing good in general.
Well, the title of the book is Do Good Design, but the design's scratched out with a Sharpie. So it's kind of Do Good Strike-Through Design. Because right. The idea is I don't want people to do good design, or not just do good design, I want them to do good.
Right.
And I, when we did the cover of the book, I, in my naivete as a first-time author, thought that we could convince the Library of Congress, et cetera, to have a line through the word design. Kind of a Prince thing, you know. I was trying to play with the medium.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were fighting these battles, like, where can you put a strike through and where can't. We tried to keep it rolling, but, like, you know, headlines in Facebook groups won't deal with a strike through, but maybe LinkedIn will, and it's been a bit of a compromise. So is it Do Good Design, or is it Do Good? We're not quite sure.
I think that's the question that
does the book answer the question of what the difference between doing good and doing good design is?
Absolutely. It does a really good job of that.
Great.
How so? Oh, indeed. Yes. I see
right.
What you
very
did
good.
There.
Very good.
There it is.
Yeah. Well, essentially in the book, what I identify is that designers, whether they're graphic designers, communication designers, they tend to not recognize how much power they have. And so my first step is I want to show designers indeed how much of an influence they have in our world. And then once they recognize that power, I want them to take responsibility for what's possible with that power. Because we, you know, we live in a time that there's never been more hope. But on the other hand, things have never been so fragile. And
exactly.
So there's an immediacy to doing good.
Right, right. And I think that's a message that especially a lot of young designers will hear from the veterans in the industry. Design can make a difference. Design can make the world a better place. And maybe when you're 25, you're like, you know, design is kerning. Maybe that's what design is to a 25-year-old. Maybe it's a Pantone color. And I've had, I've gotten into discussions online with people who really strongly take the stance that design is just, you know, it's just a thing. And it doesn't make a difference. It's just what I do for a living. And, you know, at a certain point, when does the change take place? When is it possible for someone to see what kind of good design can do?
Well, I was 19 when I started my first design studio, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
And
so like 4 years
when I started
ago.
Out. Yeah, give or take.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I remember I think I was born a designer. I was designing fonts in the edges of my notebooks. I remember like in grade 2 and
yeah.
grade 3 and when I discovered that you could actually do this thing for a living, that was just fantastic. It was like I create my own perfect little world. I'd stay up all night with Letraset. Does that help you date it? With
yeah,
Letraset and wax
way.
Of things
and
cutting up galley proofs and all that. And you create this perfect little world and you'd surround yourself with perfect objects and you thought you could shut out the rest of the world and create something, a little universe of your own. But then at a certain point I realized that no matter how perfect that little world I was creating was, no matter how perfectly I could turn a headline, if that headline wasn't saying something that was useful to the world, I was really doing a disservice to what was possible. So my background is my parents really inspired me, and they taught me that social responsibility is not optional. And so at a certain point, I thought, what can I do with the power I have as a designer, the skills I have, what can I do to help do good in the world? And that's where it started.
Okay, so now how do you get from there to the work that you do now and the book that you guys have put together? You put this book together with AIGA, correct? They contacted you about publishing it? Is that I'm trying to remember.
Well, actually, the book started, I was at a conference in Montreal a few years back, and Naomi Klein, you know Naomi Klein?
I actually do not.
Okay, and Naomi Klein wrote another Canadian author. She wrote a book called No Logo. It's pretty big. And we were both speaking at this conference, and after the presentation, she said, David, you should write a book. And I said, really? I can do that? And she said, oh, I used to do that. Okay. So I kind of sat around for a bit because I didn't really know how to go at it. But then I gave a keynote in a design day one day in Oslo in Norway. I'd been traveling for several years now, traveling with this message. And this guy in the audience said, I'm the largest publisher in Norway. I'd love to publish a book by you.
Nice.
So I said, really? Well, that's it. Well, let's do this thing. So I was just a few months later, I was standing out on a street corner in Seattle at Design Week in 2006 with Rick Griffey, who's the executive director of...
Right, we know Rick.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. So Rick says, David, how are things going? I said, well, I'm excited. I'm going to be publishing my book with this guy. And he said, David. As Rick was saying, he said, David. He says, why aren't you having us publish your book? And I said, you guys publish books?
You've already got a bidding war going. I like it.
Nice.
So I said, when Rick told me AIGA has AIGA press, I was excited. We put it all decided to get it done right there.
And so, how long ago was that? When did the book come out?
The book came out last year.
Right. Okay.
It's been out for a year.
Yeah. Okay.
It took
about
a year to get it done. It was way longer than I thought.
And apparently it takes a little while to put books together.
You know, I just thought I could take my keynote and just, you know, the keynote's about this long, throw in a lot of pictures kind of puff it up into a book.
I've got some slides. That should take about a day. Copy paste.
Yeah.
Right. I can probably publish about 50 books this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
David, let's dive into the message of the book. You know, or let me just say your message in general. I don't know. I feel like I should have a properly phrased question for that one, Donovan. What's the book about? Let me start with that.
The book is about professionalism. It's about how professionals, whether designers or any type of professional, can recognize the power they have and the special responsibilities and skills they have in society, and then identify, therefore, where they can do the most good. So as designers, we have specific powers that go beyond what most people in society have. And I usually think of three things.
Okay.
One thing is that we have the power over how messages are crafted.
Yes.
And sent. And that's very powerful stuff. Those messages could be words, it could be pictures.
And we have the power to choose these things.
We have the power to choose what we'll be involved in, and once we're involved in, we have a lot of influence over what message goes out. The second thing is we have a huge impact on the use of certain natural resources. Specifically in print, designers, we have a huge influence on how forest products are used.
Right.
So it's up to us to say, well, we'll wipe out a half a grove or a full grove on that phone book we're designing. And then the third area we have a lot of power, a special power in, is how people are depicted in society. So whether are all women supposed to look a certain way, are we going to be clear on what models we create for society as to what people expect people to be? And, you know, visuals are so strong because, you know, although the surface of our bodies is makes up a very small part of us, it's just because the way we're... You know, the eye is the largest bandwidth pipe into the human brain. It's our favorite sense, typically. And so we visual designers, we often choose what goes in that pipe.
Right.
And so when it comes to depicting human beings, what's on the surface is certainly overrepresented. It probably doesn't matter what color your skin is, but because it just happens on the outside of the body, we make a big deal of it.
Or how everyone in advertising is always really, really pretty. And that might not even have anything to do with the message.
Or women being kind of typically impossibly thin, or their legs inordinately long, the people we choose to depict, or even how we position the body. So those are the three areas. We've got the natural resources. I guess we should say them in order.
Yeah, right?
We've got the natural resources, and we've got how we depict human beings. And each of those requires a lot of care because messages can create joy, they can create intrigue, but they can also kill people. And design can be life and death. It's not just about ornamentation. It's not more even just about creating delight. Poorly designed products can ruin people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. They can. Messaging can be tailored in specific ways to convince people to do really atrocious things. That's certainly happened in human history.
Well, and, in general, we're of all the mammals, we're the one mammal that's really figured out, and perhaps all the animals, we're the one that's really figured out how to amass stuff. It's not just to create it, but to get what we need. And, there's not a big problem with, I don't have met many squirrels who gathered too many nuts for the winter.
Right.
It's not
right.
A real problem. Like, oh my goodness, look at that squirrel.
What am I going to do with all these nuts?
So we're programmed to, gather as much as we can. And that's served us well, but we've now developed the technologies and the techniques and the knowledge that we bring forward from generation to generation by figuring out how to write things down. It's made it possible for us to amass way more than we need. And that's usually not a problem, but occasionally we get a human here or there who just gets out of control. And that type of greed can fuel some pretty horrible things. So when designers get involved in helping fulfill someone's greed addiction, hey, you guys are from Omaha. Connor Oberst, he says greed is a bottomless pit. And when we get involved in fulfilling someone else's greed addiction, it can be kind of fun. Well, how can we convince millions of people to buy a certain product, to do a certain thing, to convince them, oh, you don't smell right. You need this thing.
Right.
You're not tall enough. Your skin's the wrong color. Your eyebrows are too thin. Your breasts are too small. And on it goes. And if we're part of that...
I don't even know how big my eyebrows are. You're getting me a little worried.
I need to
go check
your breasts.
Yours are tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I need to buy something
I'm
to
sure
fix
there's
that.
Something out there.
I have something for that. The eyebrow problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So seriously, the thing is that we look at right now, the biggest crisis for humanity is the environmental calamity. It's never perhaps been more obvious for us here in the United States with what's going on in the Gulf right now that our need to have stuff, it means that we're raping the earth and finding new and amazing ways to put ourselves at risk. So, and frankly, designers are culpable. We're the ones who have created this environmental problem because the entire environmental crisis is due to overconsumption. Overconsumption is entirely due to people consuming things they don't need. And who is it that's convincing people to consume stuff they don't need? Well, it's us coming up with these clever messages. And so,
buy this, be that way.
Exactly. But at the same time, we've also never had the more power to do something about it because it's never been cheaper or more immediate to send messages. And we can share messages now with way more people than ever before. So when you add that up to the democratization of technology, especially on the internet, it means designers now have an opportunity to almost directly heal every problem. And when you think, there's 2 million designers alive today.
Okay.
So if you said, I make a call, I make an ask in my book. I ask designers to pledge at least 10%.
You did that yesterday as well.
Of their time.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least 4 hours a week, I'm figuring. So if you had 2 million designers, each spending 4 hours a week, that's 8 million hours a week of pure creativity. I believe we could solve any problem the world throws at us. We just have to choose to do it.
Should we all work on these individually? How can people get together so I can put my 4 hours with someone else's 4 hours?
Well, there's all kinds of remarkable initiatives going on. And, whenever I travel, I've been to over 25 countries now with this message. And everywhere I go, I meet inspired people. I meet ordinary designers who've chosen to do extraordinary things. And that's all I am. You look at my portfolio, I'm nothing special. In fact, I think that's why the very first time I was asked to speak at a conference, they said, back in 2000, it's the first time I spoke at a design conference. And be one of these parades of your David Carsons and whatnot. They go up and they show their work. And they all say, wow, I wish I was like that person. And they ask me to speak. Oh, my work's not good enough to show it this stuff. What can I talk about? And I realized, actually, I want to talk about something that's so much more important. So I went up there and I said, hi, I'm David Berman, and I'm not going to show you any of my work today, which was uncommon.
Yeah, that, especially 10 years ago, that would have been...
Well, it was like this wacko hippie. So I went up there and spent the first 20 minutes explaining why the environmental crisis was the biggest problem of the day. And, you know, today I don't have to do that anymore.
Right.
You can see that it's a good thing or a bad thing, but, you know, it's obvious. So I get into this idea of helping designers recognize their power. And at the time, it was a kind of a, this wingnut hippie guy doing that, but it really resonated for a lot of people. And before I knew it, I found myself traveling. And the thing was, I realized that, you know, you can go to auditorium by auditorium by auditorium. You'll never reach as many people as you want. And that's why I was excited about doing the book. Because working with AIG Press, and they work with Peach Pit, which is part of Pearson, they're the largest educational publisher in the world.
Okay.
I thought, wow, imagine how many people I can reach in a book. And in fact, in November, I was in Beijing, and they were releasing the Chinese edition, because this Chinese publisher decided to release the Chinese edition, and we worked on the translation and all, but, you know, I really didn't make, you know, I couldn't really contribute that much, because I can't read Chinese.
Right.
So I met the guy who did the translation from English to Chinese, and I gave him a big hug, because I realized, it's in the moment I realized, I said to him, you've made it possible for me to reach more people than I would ever reach on my own, and there's more people speaking Chinese in the world than English. And indeed, we found that there's 600,000.
And I know that's part of the reason, I mean, we talked to Rick Raffay years ago, but they were pushing towards moving AIGA into China because they want to reach that amount of people, because they know from the sustainability issues and stuff, if you don't go in there while they're really pushing to create more designers and you don't set guidelines and kind of set best practices, someone else will.
That's really well put. In fact, you know, we were talking about the challenge of crowdsourcing yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with Debbie Millman about it. We got into this really interesting discussion with some folk from AIGA Oklahoma, and this guy also showed up who has a crowdsourcing site. We got into the whole ethics of it, and one of the key things that I identified it was that part of the key to that type of challenge is that we have to do our best to share our best practices of what professionalism looks like in design and share it with emerging economies. So rather than worry about, oh, we don't like how those designers are behaving, we can go there and say, hey, let's show you a model. Because the design industry is so much more mature in some parts of the world, like in Europe or in North America, than it is in some of these developing markets.
Is there an online companion to this that people can go to as well?
Well, on my website at davidberman.com, there's an online presence where people can do a number of things. First of all, you can take the pledge, this pledge of committing to 10% of your time on work on projects that are doing good. And I'm not talking about pro bono. I mean, you can do it pro bono, but I'm not asking you to give away your time. I want you to get paid.
Right.
I want you to have a sustainable career doing design that you love for people who deserve you and for projects who you're passionate about. So, you know, someone can choose. You asked earlier, what do I do? How do I choose?
Right.
And some people work on their own. Some people work on remarkable collaborative techniques. But ultimately, I think I find if I ask someone, I say, what are you passionate about? What do you care about? I care about tigers. I've cared about tigers since I can't remember. I've always had a stuffed tiger. And later on, and so later, earlier this year, I actually got a chance to go to a tiger sanctuary in Thailand where I'm going to help develop communication strategies so they can help bring back habitat for these tigers. You know, it horrifies me when I discovered that the tiger population today is only 20% of what it was when I was born.
Really?
Oh, my God.
And we all love tigers.
Yeah. Who doesn't love tigers?
Well, someone doesn't love them because...
obviously, there's some assholes out there.
We're destroying their habitat.
Yeah.
And they have just nowhere to live. You find what you're passionate about, and it's a pretty good chance that you can take your design skills and put that together. Now, is that something you can make a living at? I'm not sure. Sometimes some designers say, well, you know, I do good work. I do principled, ethical work. It's something fairly neutral. Maybe I work in an insurance company doing stuff that's okay. Or maybe I, you know, work in the government and I do stuff that's pretty great for society, but it's not my passion. And then in their spare time, they're helping save tigers, or maybe they're really concerned about issues about human trafficking, or, you know, something that matters. Or some people have found a way to find an issue that they can actually make a living at in their passion, and that's greatly I've been able to do that. I try to only choose clients that are doing good. You know, in around that time, 2000, I chose to. I had a firm, design firm. We had 18 people at the peak, and I chose to sell half the design firm to my partner, and okay. focus just on clients who are doing good.
What are some good projects that you've seen lately that people have done that you think have made a big difference in the world, design-wise?
Well, you know, the book, one of the things I like about the book, I guess I'm kind of biased because I kind of like the book in general, is that I wanted to, you know, I was telling the way that the book starts and I, you know, tell about, oh, the very difficult situation we have, and it seemed kind of a downer a bit. So, and later on in the book, we get to the hope and all the great things we can do and how we can get into it and do things like, whether it's simply passion or it's something more formal like design certification, all the things we can do. But I decided I would find these doing good stories. And so I've sprinkled throughout this book in type that's almost too small to read up and down the edges of the pages, these things that are doing good stories. And every one of them, they come every few pages, and every one of them is a story about some ordinary designer who simply decided to do something extraordinary.
Well, let's just add a story that isn't in the book.
Brilliant. So, you know, one of the places I take in the book is my trip to Africa, where I discovered how deep Coca-Cola has gone. I have a whole study of, how Coke has done marvelous, brilliant, pioneering things in advertising. And one of them is I show this whole study of how we go to Tanzania together and we see how Coca-Cola systematically branded the country. And I go on and on about Coke and this and that about Coke, blah, blah, blah. And in the book, I throw down this challenge and I say, because Coke has the best distribution network of anything in the whole continent, what would be possible if someone were to use that distribution network to deliver something more valuable to society than caffeinated sugar water? And this guy, Simon Barry, he contacted me and he said, you know, I've got an answer. Simon Barry created this thing called Cola Life, and you go to colalife.org. You can find it. In fact,
is that
Simon,
C-O-L-A?
C-O-L-A.
Okay.
L-I-F-E .org. And Simon's in the UK, and just last week, in fact, he quit his full-time job at the government in the UK and decided to go full-time. And so he could use your support. And what he did was he came up with this thing called the Cola Pod. And how the Cola Pod works is if you imagine on the radio, this isn't radio, is it?
Close your eyes. Imagine
you got a case of cola with 12 bottles. And if you can do the math in your head, you'd see that there's 3x4 grid of bottles. And so that means there's 8 spaces in between the bottles, where you could put a kind of a pod, a cone that would fit inside there. So these are what you call cola pods, and you can put something inside that cone. So he creates the cones, and he says you can put inside that cone medicine, you could put condoms, you could put election ballots, you could put information about avoiding AIDS, you could put smelling salts, you could distribute things inside the cola cases. And so he decided he would go to Coke with this idea that they could be part of the solution.
Oh, sure.
And so there's an example of someone doing something I think is absolutely brilliant. And he's laid down, he's just dedicated himself to it. Now, I'm not saying you've got to quit your day job like Simon has done. I'm just saying you got to make sure that the work you're doing every day as a designer is in alignment with your own personal principles. I'm not going to tell you what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad. What I know is if 95% of us were to simply avoid doing anything that's not in alignment with our own principles, that any headline you wrote or kerned, you couldn't look your child or your best friend in the eye and say it to them without flinching, then I think we'd be fine.
Awesome. Donovan, do we have 2 questions left?
We have 2 final questions.
All right. What do I get if I get them right?
No.
Respect.
Copy of the book.
I think.
Respect.
Yeah.
All right.
You get Donovan's copy of your book.
All right. Okay. Because I gave mine away. Okay. I could use one for the plane.
Nice.
Okay. Deal. Okay. Here we go.
Actually, one of them is this question is from.
Should be from Debbie, right?
Yeah.
So what we've been doing is we've been doing these interviews one after another.
No, this one's from Diana Valentine.
Oh, that's right. We did interview Diana last.
Yes.
We've been doing these one after another, and each person that we bring in, we ask them to pass a question along to the next person that we're going to interview. So Diana Valentine, who gave a great presentation at the Creative Freelancer Conference on Saturday, has a question for you.
And her question is, what makes you feel super giddy?
I love to travel. And this whole journey has really made it possible for me to travel. And I think because perhaps the work is, when you're back home and you're working and things are so stressed, you're taking all this stuff. And sometimes there's a moment where I'm just walking down a street in a city I've never been. And you know, maybe it's 1:30 at night and you're walking back to your hotel. Or maybe it's in the afternoon, you're just walking to breakfast in your new town. And you're just walking down the street and there's people, they're going about their lives. And somewhere fresh and I've got everything aligned and I, I just start feeling joyous, and I start to laugh, or I start to sing a little bit, and I just, it's a spring in my step, and I just feel this deep, gregarious joy. And I guess that would be a little giddy.
I don't know if that's a good enough answer to get the book, though, but that was pretty good. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
It was the right answer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's one of the two, though.
Oh,
the other one. Well,
no, you got two questions.
Oh, the other question.
You remember the plan?
The other question is you to give us a question for our next guest.
Well, how can I get that wrong? Do I have to, can I call a friend?
Yeah.
Throw a lifeline out there.
Throw a lifeline.
All right.
So our next guest for next week's show will be Kevin Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a question to ask Kevin.
Question for Kevin Carroll. Well, Kevin's a playful guy. If the topic is giddiness and what gets you going, well, I guess I'd like to know, what's Kevin Carroll's passion with regard to how he feels he can create a better world?
Great. Yeah, absolutely.
What's Kevin Carroll's passion?
Passion.
With regard
mm-hmm.
to how he can create a better world?
Yeah.
You got it. Okay, done. Anything else you want to talk about before we send this home?
Well, this was really fun. I mean, I'm so glad that Bryn Muth, the grand editor of How, read my book, and she called me up and she said, "Come, you got to speak How." And I've never been to How conference before, and it's just been fantastic. In fact, I wish I could stay right to the end. And I'm just really thank you guys for giving me a chance to hang. It's been great.
Glad that you had a good time.
But you know, you guys don't just do good interviews. Do good.
We try.
You can. I'm absolutely committing 10% of my week. Absolutely, I'm doing that.
Just this week or
otherwise? From here on out. I've taken a lot away from this conference about the way that I am running my business versus the way that I should be running my mm-hmm. business or that I could be running my business. And one of the things that I'm taking away from that is that 10% dedication.
Well, great. Well, and Nate, come to the Do Good Design site, davidberman.com. Take the pledge online. Add your name. You can be anonymous or not. And you add the big count goes up of how many hours of do-gooders we have pledged. It'd be wonderful.
And I'm probably already doing at least that many hours a week.
Oh, that is apparent to me.
And for the listeners at home, you guys head on out there to davidberman.com. The book is Do Good Design by David Berman. Thanks again.
Amazon.com, but better support your local independent bookstore.
Right.
Especially if they can get the strike through on the title down right.
Right.
Yeah. Support the people that can figure that out on their
strike through people.
Does WordPress support that? Probably.
No, it doesn't. That's actually one of our challenges.
Damn it. Okay, so we're not even going to be doing it on our site.
Rewrite WordPress so that we can put the title correctly.
Yeah, put someone on that, guys.
Yeah, let's do it.
Someone dedicate their 4 hours, done.
All right, so we will be back next week with probably our last show from the 2010 Denver How Conference. Find that, this, and many others.
You're dragging this out over months of this calendar.
It's going to be 1 week. It's 1 week.
The conference, by the time anyone's listening to this, the conference is 7 weeks past.
We could all be like some distant star long gone out by the time
you will have traveled to tiger habitats back and forth by then.
Hope this Gulf crisis is over by then. I hope they figure it out.
I was thinking about that when you brought it up and thinking that, oh my God, if you know, this will go up in 7 weeks. What's that situation going to be like by the time the show comes out?
Well, you know, I hope there's a silver lining that it really comes home to people here in North America that we just, there's consequences. That every time we insist on having two little stir sticks in our coffee, that it means we just need a little bit more petrochemicals and mm-hmm. we got to dig deeper and deeper for them.
Yep. Well, all right. We will see everyone next week. Find out more at 36point.com. Donovan, are we out? Okay, let's do it.
Okay, let's do a sound check here.
Yeah, David, how are you doing this morning? Is that coming through all right?
I'm not sure.
I think I'll be a little louder than that.
I think.
How am I? I'm doing okay this morning.
I don't think we'll have any problems with sound.